The workshop has the title Free Science, and we have two talks. One from Herbert and one from Kaspar, alias Günther von Aachen, about Open Archives Initiative and about Wiki research. I think we will have the talks first, and then we, or maybe a discussion after each talk.
I actually think it will be much more convenient if you just ask me while I'm going along, as far as I'm concerned, because I'm not going to give a paper. I'm just going to present the work I'm doing here, and it's quite natural that you should come up with questions as I go along. So the main thing, I guess, would be to check that that we are on time.
Okay.
So that he will have enough.
So, okay. So please, if you have a question, give me a sign, because you need the micro, and we need the micro for listening at the audio stream.
Okay, my name is Herbert Rachowitz. I'm teaching philosophy here at this institution. And what I want to present this afternoon is one of the activities I have started to build up, basically to look back how I got there. It's really something that developed out of my interest in fiddling around with software. It is basically a result of things that are available with Linux. Once you enter into the Linux world, you have a broad spectrum of available ideas and technologies. And since I'm not a programmer, but I'm partly part of a system administrator, so I kept an open eye on what was on the market, if I may say so. And one thing that I found out quite early was that there were several offers of free archiving software. At this moment in time, I had not really had any idea what this was about. I was interested in the concept of archiving stuff, but I had very little knowledge about the theoretical and technical background that is important for the Open Archive Initiative. So I really learned this going along, more or less in trying to setting up and to configure the software I'm going to show you. I found out that in order to setting the software up in the right way, I had to know several things that I didn't know. I had to read them in order to set up the software the right way, and suddenly I found myself as a theoretician of open archives, just because I decided to try and make a software run under a Linux system on my computer. Now, this is for a personal biographical backflash of how I got there. Now, I offer you two more remarks as a means of introducing this issue. One is the very title of this session. It's called Free Science, and it should raise some eyebrows, because, I mean, after all, isn't it the case that freedom just is an integral part of science? It belongs to science. It just isn't science if you are coerced to do something. We more or less take it for granted that freedom of thought, freedom of expression is written into our educational institutions. Die Freiheit, die Wissenschaft und ihre Lehre ist frei. Science and teaching is free. That's written. If you enter the building, it's written there. So it seems to be very redundant to call a session free science. But as most of you will have noticed, even before coming to Vienna, and as has been more obvious to listening in listening to the presentations here, there actually is a danger of freedom being removed from science. Very important developments are happening that restrict freedom of science as education is pushed into the area of commerce, as the big medical, biological, scientific firms, corporations become more actively involved in scientific projects that they appropriate for their own special uses. All of this content that is developed in traditional scientific ways is being made property, and it's closed off from the ordinary circulation. Now, you might say that this is the case in sciences, in medicine, and stuff like this, and it is not the case in the traditional humanities, because there is not so much money involved, and that shouldn't be there shouldn't be too much of a burden on the humanities, at least. Now, this is not, in principle, of course, there is more freedom and less property in the humanities, but there it's right now it is really a battlefield. It's something that is very much a matter of contention, and I'll give you one example of my own personal philosophical work where it became very, very obvious to me that something has to be done in order to keep science free, and the archive I'm going to present to you, that's an effort to ensure that free content is available. It's not just available, but is available on a technical level and on a global scale that enables scholars to actually compete with the technical expertise that people try, that people who try to close this stuff in and to make you pay for it, bring to the task. Now, my example, which really was an eye opener, if I may say so, comes directly from my work in Wittgenstein. That's one of the one of my areas of competence, and you might have already heard of it. If not, I'll tell you that the Wittgenstein Nachlass, which contains 20,000 pages, many of them not published, not yet published, was actually digitized in Norway and made available to scholars in a digitized format. And the digitization was done, the way it actually was done was they developed a particular markup language which is called Max, similar to HTML and XML, and then they used this markup language to filter the work, to filter the transcription of the Wittgenstein manuscripts into WordPerfect files. Those WordPerfect files were put into a proprietary infobase, a program that made one huge binary file out of all of this thing, and then they burned it onto a CD-ROM, and you can use it under Windows NT and even on under Windows 2000. So you can buy this CD, it costs a lot, and you can only use it on particular versions of the Windows operating system. I just returned from Norway, where they actually produced this stuff. It is, I told them this 5 years ago, but now it has actually become a reality that together with this textual material, they had, that's a very important stuff, they had facsimiles of 20,000 pages facsimiles, which are included on a second CD within this package. And the state of the situation is that under the current Windows version, you cannot use the you cannot use the integrated facsimiles viewer anymore. You have to install a second viewer in order to give you those facsimiles, which are one of the main reasons why you might care to buy this CD-ROM. So the point is, of course, that the sustainability of an approach like this, burning stuff within a proprietary format onto a CD, and making the progress of philosophical scholarship in this case dependent on Microsoft Windows, it's just a very bad idea. This is again sort of an introduction of a motivation of why I am doing the stuff that I'm trying to do. Now, I think I'll. Can you give me this microphone? Because I'm. I will be more flexible this way. Now, what is the idea of the Open Archive Initiative? If I talk to people about this, scholars, and in particular scholars that are already in some way aware of the problems I've just been hinting at, people tend to tell me, well, yes, that's quite right, but my homepage is on the web, and I can find myself on Google, and my friends can find me with Google too. It's a surprisingly, it's a very strong argument, in particular in view of the fact one has to admit that quite often considerable amount of energy and diligence go into the homepage presentation of those of my friends, who, of course, they are the ones on the avant-garde, really. I mean, at my institution, and we are a bit uncommon because we are more progressive than most German language philosophy departments. There are three or four of my colleagues who have a web presentation, and they spent several weeks to build up this web presentation. And then, of course, it hurts. It hurts if you tell them, look, this web presentation is probably not the best you can do. And as a sort of defensive mechanism, they tell me that they can be found in a Google search. Now, if I tell them, okay, if I know your name is Herlinde Pauer-Studer and I look after Herlinde Pauer-Studer, I'll find you, all right. But I know you've published on human rights. Now, imagine I type in human rights with Google. I will not find you unless I look to page 770 or something like this, then you might well be available. Your link might be available, but with searching for human rights, even human rights and philosophy, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, to find you. So what's the solution to this? The solution to this is to have an altogether different approach to metadata, to put it quickly, a different approach to how you present your work on the net. This is, of course, some of you might know, there is talk about the semantic web, talk about the www as being an an enormous encyclopedia which enables you to collect, bring together knowledge the world over. In order to do this, of course, you have to have the proper categories. You have to have a proper procedure to find out the needle in the haystack, of course. And this is an more or less utopian undertaking. And what the Open Archive initiative is doing is they are trying to initialize to implement part of a semantic web within the area of scholarly concern, and this is done by metadata basically. Now, metadata is not a very very sexy concept, it is in fact it sounds more like a nuisance. And in addition to that, most of you know that there is a metadata tag even in HTML, but that's more or less useless since people use it to write in 50 times sex, 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 and stuff like this in order to be pushed on the top of. Now, the way to proceed in a situation like this is to come up with a more or less basic, very simple set of descriptive metadata that's taken from bibliography science, from librarians. It's something that's called the Dublin Core. Dublin is a town in the United States where this core was decided upon, and it's basically what you find if you go to the library and look at the detailed entry of items you find in the library. Now it was decided that also in an electronic form you should be able to use this set of metadata to describe content. By content, you think of written stuff, but it can also be multimedia stuff. Everything that you want people to search for and to look for. Now, once you, I'm going to show you how it actually works out, but now for the start, I'm going to give you the general idea. The general idea is that if in a fitting way your content is equipped with those metadata and put on the www, then you could, since the metadata are standardized, you could devise a program that automatically collects the metadata from archives that are known to a certain so-called harvester center. The collecting of the metadata is done by so-called harvesters, and what they do is with the help of particular scripts, they harvest the metadata from archives that are made available to them. Once they got those metadata, they can sort of work on those metadata, present them, transform them, get surplus value from those metadata. Even so, the original content might be sitting at your personal computer, they might be distributed, the original content might be distributed all over the internet in various small or mid-level archives, the metadata can be collected, can be made available. Now, if my colleague Herr Linde, Bauer-Studer, would care to put her stuff into an archive like this, it would be a very, very different situation from the Google situation, because the Google situation is, so the homepage plus Google situation is a situation where you can have one particular site and then you have the anti-internet searched through by Google. Now, in a situation like the one I've been sketching, scientists can access particular so-called service providers. I'll introduce some terminology here. The small archives where you can where you can einreichen, submit, not where you can submit your particular stuff. Those small archives are called data provider, and the metadata of the data provider are harvested by the service providers, and the service providers they range about the whole spectrum of science, and here you get with every single search you get the appropriate hits more or less. Now, how is this? I brought you two sketches so that you can visualize what I've been talking about. You get a user. The user registers at a particular archives. Can deposit his or her content in the data archives, and the data providers receive data from the users and provide data to the service providers. The service providers you'll show in the next slide. You have various formats of data providers, various possible formats of data providers, because once you got once you get this idea that it would be nice to collect scholarly work together in an archive, there obviously are different options to do though. Two of the most prominent options are, one option is the so-called institutional data provider, and the second is the disciplinary data provider. It might be interesting for a university to say, for example, we want to collect all the scholarly output of our employees in order to show how important and productive we are. So the University of Graz has an open archive. It doesn't, but it might be the case that if you're interested in what work is done at the University of Graz, just go there and you will find what is happening there. That's one approach. There are some advantages to that, because if you look at it like this, you can actually exert some pressure, some institutionalized pressure on the employees. You got librarians and you get someone who looks and say, why didn't you already submit your work? We need this in order, for example, to have a better public relation, to get some funding, things like this. Second option is the disciplinary data provider, which is across various institutions and universities, and which is concentrated on the discipline. So it's biology, or it's Latin philology, or it's divinity, or it's philosophy. In my case, it is philosophy. What I did was to install a disciplinary archive, which I will show you in a moment. Now here in this graph there is not yet the overall picture is that you could sort of embed this situation
in an even larger framework where the data providers will be seen as feeding their stuff into the service providers. Now, the archive I have installed looks like this. It's called Sammelpunkt, point of collection, something like this. And here I'll have to say something about the software point of view. I've been talking about metadata, and those metadata, they have to get into the picture in some way. How is this done? You can register at the archive, and when you submit a piece of your work, you have to run through several forms, web forms. Those web forms ask you about what's the title, where is it published, what are the keywords. Please give us an abstract. You put on into those web forms those informations. And when you submit, when you finally submit your information, what you typed in into those forms is automatically translated into XML metadata according to the Dublin Core. So the most important stuff is handled by the underlying software in this submission process. And what you in the end get is you get your piece of work, which can be in any format. In principle, it can be any format you like. Basically, it's PDF and HTML. Some is ASCII material, but most of the time it will be PDF. The PDF stuff is saved in a particular place, and the pointers to this particular location and to the metadata are saved in a MySQL database in this particular case. As you see, it's not in principle new, but the interesting stuff is I should point out that talking about cooperation, talking about increased productivity by means of pooling resources, it is just very important to notice that I, as a small data provider, I'm just not able to care about a lot of stuff like licensing, running complicated searches, like offering additional consultations, statistics, whatever. But once my data are fed into a service provider, that's what this one does here, metadata feeding. I can have opaque access. I can have metadata crosswalks. All lot of fascinating technical stuff that's done for several data providers at once. And to skip a bit ahead of my presentation, there are in fact now already, on a global scale, at least four. Very, very powerful international service providers. The service providers. Yes, all those four. They are completely operating completely free of Java and in principle, because they are. There is something I skipped. I should, I'm going to talk about this later. The principle the service providers are built upon is the so-called OAIPMH, Open Archive Initiative protocol for metadata harvesting. So the service providers, they know, so the protocol that governs the harvesting of the metadata, that's laid down. It's a very simple protocol. It's six commands. In principle, it's a data provider has to...
A data provider, a certified data provider has to be able to respond to six commands. I'm going to show you what those six commands are, and with the help of those six commands, the harvesting process can be done. Now, the service providers, they are just not in business if they don't use the OAI and PMH, so they are dependent. On this protocol type, and they are dependent on the data providers, and it would completely ruin their business. It's just impossible for them to close their services. It would be possible for any proprietary software to very easily develop some program to harvest all those data. In fact, I've seen a Python program which is several hundred lines, not more than 100 lines, and with the help of these 100 lines of Python code, you can extract all the information of my archive and do whatever you want to. But why should someone want to sell this if you got four big shot data provider that already have the same information and do quite a lot of interesting stuff with this? So that's my answer, I guess. So you can have a look at all the niceties of the site. I don't want to go into the details. Here we got a tree of subjects, and basically what happens is here you get the metadata, here you get the abstract, and to get a reference to the actual material. Now, the more interesting stuff that you will probably not easily understand unless I understand unless I explain this to you is what's to be found in info. Here is the info stuff, and I'll show you one of those service providers. Though the four service providers I was mentioning are the four of those: ARC, OESTA, Open Archive Harvester, and SAIL ePrints. All of them are they are pretty much built on the same data data pool. So I'll just show you how this goes on. I'll type in. Now, this in particular is located at the Old Dominion University. It's somewhere in the United States, I guess. And I'll, since I put some stuff of Georg Megle in this archive, I'll just type in Megle here. Basically, what it does is it runs through its own database and shows those 30 records. As it happens, it's Megle is probably not the best idea because the name all of the Megle entries are in the Sammelpunkt. But if I, for example, use Savigny. Then I find several pieces you can see here. You get one record in Dortmund, one at PubMed Central, two at Sammelpunkt. These are different Savignys. As you can see, Annie Gregg Savigny, she's written on
a hard song of today, then you get Eike von Savigny, that's the one in the Sammelpunkt, Bedeutung, Sprachspiel, Lebensform. You get another Savigny, Detection of Legionella, Antigenuria, whatever. So you get the basic idea. This is your pool of scholarly information. But that's not, so a bit more background here. One thing I wanted to show you is this archive test. That's interesting because that's the Open Archive Initiative main page, and it provides several services. The six commands that I mentioned are listed here. One is identify, one is list metadata formats, one is list sets, identifies records, list records, gets records. So what you can do at this particular occasion, here you get data providers, lots of data providers. Let's look at Sammelpunkt, which should be someplace here. Here you get, you pick Sammelpunkt, and you now what you do is, by way of a web interface, you do the same stuff that the harvester does during nighttime when it tries to update his information. You get the identify answer Sammelpunkt 8080. That's pretty basic. Now here you get the metadata formats. That's an important stuff because I've been talking about Dublin Core metadata, but there are different possibilities of metadata, and that's important because, of course, for automated harvesting to proceed, you have to have knowledge in advance of what format you are going to meet, and there are several possible formats. The one I'm working with, as you see here, is the OAID Dublin Core format, so it tells you tells you what format this archive is using. I'll show you the third one, then I'll stop here. The third is now list sets, and those sets are precisely the categories that I use in my archive to be able to bring some order into this situation. And then the next stuff is identifiers. Those identifiers are the identifiers of the individual items. And then you can list the records, just show, let the archive exhibit them, and you can get the records harvesting in the literal sense. Now, now there are not only data provider and service providers, there are by now services that enable you to that sort of collect together service providers that are these are the registered service providers. You get one particular service that's here. That's a registry of everything that's done, more or less, under various various questions, under various angles. Everything that's done in the field of open archives. For example, I'll show you one thing that's that is quite interesting. I find here you get the top level domains of the data provider, so you get a rough picture of who is active in this field. There is United States and org, and the United Kingdom is quite prominent. Then Germany is not bad at all. Let's look at Germany. Here you find the data providers in Germany. Some of them, like for example this 1+1 version, that's not really maintained anymore, it seems to me, but there are very influential and interesting German data providers. For example, the Humboldt University in Vienna, the Duisburg catalog, that's an important one. And in Austria, you get five of them. Two of them are, Yeah, five. It's actually four. Yeah. So Sammelpunkt is one of them. The second interesting one is from the University of Economics. The two other ones are minor ones, not so important. Now, I guess...
Question?
Yeah, I guess that's where I stop.
May I? who can become a data provider?
Everyone.
And how?
The only thing you do is you pick up I didn't tell you about this. You can, in order to fulfill the tasks that I've outlined, there are several software packages. The most popular one is the one I'm using here too. It's called ePrints. What it does is it provides you with an entry point. It provides you with all the scripts to do the metadata translation, register, and things like this. Now, if you download the ePrints, install the ePrints, write to Open Archive Initiative that you are opening up an archive and you are following some particular guidelines. They want you to describe what you are doing. You are in. That's it.
Sightseer, probably?
Sightseer, yeah. Is harvesting. Sightseer is using, amongst other things, is using the PMH protocol. So they are automatically harvesting the same sort of information. Yeah.
What about caching? Like if a file is gone from the web server where it came from? Do you cache the texts?
I'm actually storing all this stuff in my archive.
All stuff.
This stuff is actually stored in my archive. It's not URLs. It is the digital document that's residing in there.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's actually interesting too, because of course for single scholars they are not as well versed in how to maintain a home site, a home page, things like this. So one thing that I can offer them is a reasonably stable guarantee that this stuff will be here, will be provided. And actually, Google finds those. And if I look at Meglia, for example, there was a time it changes, of course, but I was surprised about the fact that something I should mention too. I was surprised about the fact that when I put in the Meglia stuff in the Sammelpunkt archive, there was a time when the Meglia stuff, when you looked for Meglia in Google, the Sammelpunkt stuff was much more higher up than his own homepage. And for a very simple reason, because of the principles of Google, because Google puts emphasis on connection. Now, once a Meglia is at Sammelpunkt, where many directions go into Sammelpunkt, Meglia is put up, is pushed up, and his own homepage is below some of his contributions there.
So a small linking farm.
Yes, yes.
I have a question. How does peer review fit in with open publishing or open access?
I have not said anything about this, sorry, but it's a limitation of time. Basically, what the idea of this is, this should already be peer reviewed stuff. So it's
pre-order it, publication on the archive. Yeah, that's peer reviewed.
In my field, in philosophy, there is no culture of preprints. There's very little in the German language. There are just no preprints in philosophy. That's just in the United States. It's different. But there are just no preprints. So what you get is actually stuff that's written, that's accepted for publication. And you are invited to, in addition to that, archive this. Now, this immediately raises the question of copyrights and entitlement of archiving stuff like this. It's a gray zone, more or less. But one quick answer is to point out that
the status quo is like this, that many publishers accept the stuff being self-archived after an initial time lag, with a certain time lag. Let's put it like this. They know that after 1 year, they will not be able to earn anything from a piece in philosophy that's been published in a written, in a printed version, and it will in fact be to their advantage because they keep their own name and they keep their own enterprise in circulation by making it available.
Okay, but what about other areas of science where peer review is important, like physics, computer science, and so on? Do you know about any endeavors for finding ways to peer review for publishing on an open archive?
I mean, there is probably a misunderstanding here. We publishing in open archives, that's an expression that might be misleading because this is not an electronic journal. It's not. This would be an interesting project, but it's not. If this were an electronic journal, we would have to have an editorial board. We would have to have a review procedure in order to be respectable. In order for the process of peer reviewing being put into practice in the electronic area, and that's something that's going to happen anyway, but this is not what I'm trying to do here. My main inspiration is that if you look at home pages of German language philosophers, which is my main concern, I'm always deeply depressed because what they do is by now they have their publication lists, comes together with their CVs, so you get pages and pages and pages of lists of publications, because that's what the people need in order to apply for some grants or things like this.
You can't look at them.
You can only see the list. It's just a crazy thing. What they do, they put their publication lists online. I mean, it's like in like war medals. They come like those big those officers with this chest of war medals, where they show I won in the battle of so and so, I won in the battle of so and so. You don't get the battle, you just see the medals. They show off their medals on their home pages, and you can't do anything with those medals. And it would be so much more interesting, and it would be more profitable for them and for everyone if they put the stuff that they wrote 10 years ago, for example.
They can't make money from it. No one gains.
Precisely. It seems to be such an obvious thing, but it's incredibly difficult to convince people to do that. I think that will change at some time, but right now it's very, very difficult.
Okay, thank you.
So one more question. We have to switch to the other talk.
So first, I have a short question. What is about mirroring, mirroring initiatives? Mirroring.
Mirroring?
Yes, is there done something on this?
Who is mirroring
what? Mirror your archives. Or if it's archives on philosophies, open archives, do they mirror themselves, each other, or something like this?
No. I mean, some of the service providers actually use the GET record, and they do a mirror of my stuff. So you have a local copy of the stuff, and you have a link to my place. So you can do it, but it's not usually done.
Okay. The second question is: what is the difference to well-known preprint archives like Ixlan?
To
preprint archives like Ixlan. You know Ixlan.
Ixlan.
What's the difference from the ORI?
Well, I would have to look at the preprint archive. I would have to look at how they handle metadata. The difference, of course, is, I mean, there can be a preprint archive if you want just the preprint archive. That's okay. If it runs according to OAI PMH, name, which means that the metadata is put on display according to these standards, then it's just an open archive. Regardless if it's preprints or postprints or whatever, then it's just according to this standard that that the stuff can be collected. Now, if it's not harvestable, then that's the important difference. I don't think that the distinction preprints or postprints is the important one here. The difference is whether you can, by means of this standardized protocol, make the metadata stuff available for all those harvesters, or if this is not the case.
So I think we should finish here. Thank you very much, Herbert. And now we switch to Kasper. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Kasper Schoen, and I'm doing a PhD research, and I kind of got frustrated about some things, and that's why I came up with the idea of doing wiki research. And I have my presentation on the wiki. You might all have heard of Wikipedia, I think, because like the German version is already quite big. And but in Wikipedia, which is a huge knowledge base, you can't do any original research. So if you want to go beyond already known things, you can't do it in there. It's already, like, the Wikipedia has been started 3 years ago. And it already has many, many articles and information. And the idea of the wiki is that anybody like can edit any article. So even main pages of most languages can be changed even without logging in. So you can just go to any internet connection and start changing and editing. Improving, whatever. And Wikipedia is hosted and by Wikimedia Foundation, but the copyright of edits are retained by the contributors, so they can't change the license of the project, which is for some people negative. Some people think it's okay because they're using the GFDL, GNU Free Documentation License. And also the software is available under the GPL, which is MediaWiki. And MediaWiki is by many considered to be one of the best wiki systems because the layout kind of works. With other wikis you have uppercase links, which I find rather ugly myself, or little icons. Another very good thing is the edit history. You can exactly see who changed what, like on the word or symbol level, by they use colors and they have next to each other, which makes, like, if there's somebody who vandalizes a page by putting bullshit on it, you can go back in a snap. There's also the possibility to use tech on the wiki to do math or a check, and they're making some more modules like this. For instance, Go, you can do section editing. So instead of editing the entire page, you just click on a paragraph, edit, and then you can to have a better overview of that little part. Otherwise, you're looking at a long list of text, which is kind of problematic sometimes with wikis. Another thing which is nice is the message transclusion, which means that you can have little messages which are included in other pages. So you can have standard texts, for instance, for if a page is voted for deletion, then so somebody thinks it has to be removed, he puts up a message, and then people can see that it has been put there. And because sometimes it happens that somebody creates a page and other people think that it's like bullshit. If you start writing a page about X, B, L, D, Y, and it doesn't mean anything, then it has to be removed. There are also, apart from the article pages, you have a talk page for every article in the case of Wikipedia, which means that you can discuss or ask questions on the talk page. If someone doesn't agree with what has been written on a page, he can change it back or change it, and someone else might disagree. In this case, you have a problem with a neutral point of view in Wikipedia, that's what they call it. And then you have to try and resolve the issue, which usually works quite well. Sometimes it takes months, but after a while, somehow mysteriously, it works, because people tend to go for the compromise, even if they're very much activistic. It's also easy to find information about the structure of the site of the wiki, because you can see if there are 10 links to a page that doesn't exist, then you can have a list of most wanted pages, so you can see if there is a need for certain topics. But this is most of. These are very useful for Wikipedia, but for a small wiki it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you have a wiki like 200,000 pages, it's quite useful. Some other free collaborative projects are Wikibooks, which is actually, this is on Wikibooks right now, which is for textbooks for schools in principle, and it started I think a year and a half ago, and it's still like growing gradually. Already there are quite some language courses, and it's quite interesting. There's the Wikiversity, which actually just started, which is more towards direct presentations or for students to learn on a specific topic. And it's not very clear yet what it's going to be, but I think it will contain presentations by teachers, but that can be extended. There's a Wiktionary, which in German I think they want to call it Wiki Wörterbuch, which is a dictionary. And then there are some other projects which might be interesting because it's Econox here, which is Disinfopedia. They want to collect lots of information about PR, public relations firms, think tanks, all these kind of things which are hard to find information on. And they're trying to get every little bit they can find and add it there. There's also Consumerium, when they try to create free software and infrastructure to inform customers about the goods they're buying. So that you can know that if you buy Coca-Cola, that you actually support a company that kills people who strike, or things like that. But they decided to do the research to start with, like links between companies and which company owns what. That's what they do directly on Wikipedia, because it's encyclopedic information. It works. It's okay. So. There's also Cognopedia. Actually, someone else added this, so I don't really know what it does. So it's probably related to this Infopedia. This is like Wiki, because I wrote the text and somebody else thought, well, I need to put this there. And yeah. And this Wiki Travel. All the other ones are under the GFDL. So the, like in the GFDL text corpus, which means that you can easily move text or copy text from one to the other. Wiki Travel decided to use the CC Creative Commons license because there are some advantages of it. But because the GFDL is already used so much, it's probably better to continue for wiki research using the GFDL, because the Wikipedia kind of mixes very well with it, I think. And I wanted to mention Wikitravel because I think it's a very good idea to have it. And on Wikipedia, the thing which triggers the idea for wiki research is that you shouldn't do original research on it. It's not a primary source, so you can analyze, evaluate, interpret, or make an overview of existing research, but you can't directly do research on it. Which in fact did happen for, I think, the article about colorblindness. They created some images to test whether you're colorblind or not, because they thought the literature that existed wasn't very clear. And so it does happen still. There's a difference between free information projects and free software projects, which is the main thing is like that it's much easier to join a free information project because you don't need any specific knowledge about syntax, or you can't crash anyone's computer by just a small, like, forgetting a bracket or something. And because it's text, you also can have some people make spelling errors and typos. Other people can easily fix what's wrong. And it's also not necessary at all to be an expert to write on something. If you know just a very little bit, or you want to know more about a topic, you can directly add your information, the information you know, for instance, on Wikipedia, and then somebody else will come by in the future and adds his knowledge. And after a while, the information might be that good that real experts start using it and adding their information. But before, if you have just one line about a topic, they will probably won't join. But if there's a huge overview of a specific topic, it might be very interesting for them. The similarities are that there are many translations into many languages, which are like very possible, and it requires an internet connection, which is still like only a small part of the global population has one, so that's kind of pity. Actually, the idea that it you start with something very little, somebody called it stone soup. You have like a village that has no ingredients whatsoever, you have no vegetables, just have water and stones. So they put the water in a big kettle, add some stones, and they ask people from other villages to come along and have their great stone soup. But they should take with them a few ingredients, and then they continue this, and then after a while they end up with the great soup. That's the idea. And I think Wikipedia right now is already a gigantic soup with many ingredients. There's the scientific institutes, and they're more and more moving, or they're pushed towards the private funding of their institutes because of neoliberal viewpoint that the state should invest less and less in any public good. which has a lot of disadvantages, which already some were mentioned by Herbert. But I think it also leads to less cooperation, because if something is commercially interesting, the urge to publish or release all the results is a lot less, because other people can use the work and which you could have done to make money. There's also the problem of bias. If you're paid by Microsoft to do research on the comparison of GNU Linux and Windows, the results might be a little bit biased, which happens lots of times, but it also happens in other fields. I can't think of an example right now, but it's, and these were already mentioned. Yeah, well, if software is made by private funding, the private funder usually doesn't want to have it released as free software, and so it leads to less free software, which is bad. And there's also file formats, which are quite important. For instance, MP3, which was started by, or they kind of invented it, I think, or no, not really, probably Fraunhofer, yeah. And they at first they didn't charge any money, and then they started charging for encoding, and now they're already asking money for decoders of MP3. So after they have created such a big user base of MP3, they now want to cash in on it, whereas there are many formats that are better. But they used research, which they did themselves, but they built it on other existing research. Because they're private, are they actually private, or are they Fraunhofer? Is it a private institute? Or
does anybody know? It's not private.
This is sogar, so it's even a public institute. Okay. Yeah. Well, you probably know this, but what is very common, what I see, at where I work and at other institutes, is that people are using MATLAB on GNU Linux, whereas there are many alternatives to MATLAB, but people are continuing to use it instead of putting effort in improving the free variant. Which is Octave, or you can use Python, which is much better, I think. But there's no urge to move away from proprietary to collaborative model, I think. And most scientists that do create free software, they often work, they often do that in their spare time. So, about publications, already Herbert talked about it, and there are many publications that you can't freely access. You have to pay to access the database of certain conferences, and redistribution is hardly ever possible. Well, they're doing it with the Open Archive thing, but whether it's legal is still the question, apparently. So, okay.
No one really knows.
Yeah.
It's very much in flux.
Yeah.
If I may just interject here. The problem is that publishers themselves don't know what's best for them. So there are many different formats and very individual treaties between a single publishing house and their authors, and it changes all the time. But there is a general trend that publishers begin to realize that in the long run it might be interesting for them to join, to actually join, and not to close things away.
Yeah. Well, modification of those articles is like out of the question, I think. Or yeah. And often what I see in the field why I'm working on, which is artificial intelligence kind of thing, you see that in publication there is discussion of software, and the software is created by the author, but it just the software is just vaguely sketched. So in order to obtain the same results, it's very hard to falsify if what they state is correct, if they don't release the software with it. And even inside institutions, there's sometimes competition between several people working on the same field, but there are people who try to keep the stuff for themselves. So it's so I proposed Wiki Research, where the idea is that anybody can change and improve things. Putting articles which fit in the scope is to be encouraged, I think. But also articles that are rejected by journals and conferences, actually especially those that are interesting, because they can be improved when other people look at them. And one experiment of Wiki Research was already started. It's Wiki Science, so it's the study of wikis themselves. And it's actually put on Wikibooks right now. And the paper or thing I wrote for today is also in there. If source code is if there is source code that belongs to the text, it should probably not be under the GFDL, which is already considered to be by some bad license for anything, but for source code it's bad, I think, because it's not meant to be for that. Because of the previous versions, you can check in Wikipedia. You can easily restore the vandalism if it occurs, and on the English Wikipedia it occurs like quite often. For instance, articles such as on Bush or on political theories, which are kind of doubtful. You have people that think they're funny, or they have. Sometimes there are fascists put their stuff, but the more vandalism there is on a page, the more regularly it is checked. So now it takes like 1 minute before vandalism on the page on George Bush at Wikipedia is restored. Though this might be a bit more tricky for original research, since it's different than doing an encyclopedia or a textbook on something that is already known. But only time and a system that's running can tell whether it can succeed or not. So I think right now is scientific publications and the way science is organized is kind of based on specific authors, and it's kind of authoritarian. You have professors that are kind of high priests of science, and they it goes like down to teach university teachers, and you have the PhD students, and then the bachelor students. And I think there might be another way possible to do science, but we have to see it. And you can see authoritarian versus anonymous, because on a wiki, usually you don't mention the author of the text in the text itself. You can see the page history, or you can have the names mentioned in the discussions, but not on the text itself. That's quite different. Also, the way wikis evolve is very much anarchistic, I think. There's no power model, or anybody has kind of the same power in a wiki. There are moderators, but they are expected to be to stay on the background and only block people that really vandalize pages too often. Or even the idea is, if you're a moderator on a wiki, you shouldn't have a very pronounced viewpoint. So that's why I wouldn't want to be a moderator on Wikipedia, because I know from myself that I kind of want to show my viewpoint, which is possible, by the way, because Wikipedia is supposed to have a neutral point of view, but you can depict views by people if you clearly state that there are views. And so you don't have to say that Adolf Hitler was a bad guy if you just mention the facts about what he did. So it's easy to kind of add activistic information without becoming and keeping it there, if you know that you shouldn't write it in the way you would write it on in a project like in the media or in any other activistic thing. I already said something about the license. I think it's a good choice, because the existing information available is GFDL, like most of the Wikipedia is completely GFDL, which is a good base to start doing things with. The attribution of writers, which is not like mentioning clearly in the article itself, but in order to avoid copying, or if somebody copies something from an existing publication, that you can know who it was, and also to possibly find the original author, it's a good, I think. And mathematics is probably the most adequate science to do on wiki research, because there are strict proofs. There's not a lot of discussion possible. You could discuss the axioms and the conjectures, but they don't pop up every day, so it's possible. You talked about the colorblindness tests, so probably kind of biological and psychological text could be written based on experiments done on wiki research, because you can have a great many test subjects which aren't very isn't an heterogeneous part of the population. But the same happens at psychology department and where I studied, because they just took the students to do the tests. And if you ask people who look at wiki research to take the test, it doesn't matter that much, I think, in order to get some information. History and humanities might be a much more difficult thing, because often it is about defending a certain point of view, which is very hard, because then it would just lead to endless discussions and to no progress at all. If you want to do write historic research, it's already second. It's not primary source anyway, because you go in for the primary sources and you write something about it. So it could be done directly on Wikipedia already. If you, of course, think about the neutral point of view, because you can't put your own point of view in it, so unless you're very neutral, I think. About wiki research and Wikipedia, the good thing is that it's in many languages it can be translated without licensing problems or problems to find good qualified translators, because you can do it wiki style. And Wikipedia is already being worked on in 80 languages or more, and this way every language can have, in principle, its encyclopedia. And the same counts for research, which is currently all being done in English. So if somebody writes, for instance, in the Czechian language, an article, and there will be like very little other people that in his field that will write it, read it. And by using wiki research, it's much easier to allow people to do research in their own language, which can be translated later to English or German or French, like the big languages spoken by many people. The science, it's very much about the names of the authors, I think. You have a specific scientist, whereas wiki projects lead to anonymization, which is kind of the authoritarian versus anarchistic or anonymous way of doing it. So it's probably not at all attractive to established scientists. But people who haven't finished their studies yet, or haven't even started it, are many genius kids that might be interested in doing some math, or people who decided to do a completely different thing than continuing with science could be interested in it, or even scientists that do publish already but are also having a hobby project on the side, which they might be interested to publish something about. And if a wiki attracts enough qualified people, then you have a kind of peer review. It's different than what happens now with publications, where you have a group of renowned scientists of the field that check the publication, but you have here you have many people you don't know that are going to check it, so it might not work. But after a while, you see with Wikipedia the quality is always being improved, so the same thing can happen, and it can lead to both more original research but also to charlatanesque, so kind of bullshit things. But that depends on the people that are attracted. So basically what you see with wikis is that you have the starting phase, which can be years, is very important, because then you set the kind of structure, the way it's being dealt with, which can of course change. But once there are 20 people have a certain idea for example, pseudo sign is accepted, and then it's probably not working. But we'll have to see. And aside, on the side besides wiki research, it's good to improve existing Wikipedia articles to have clear definitions of concepts used in wiki research. And after there's something that's reasonably interesting, it can be moved to Wikibooks or copied, actually, used on Wikiversity or on Wikipedia. And this is the URL. And that's what I had to say. So I hope there are questions.
Could you show us how to quickly use some of the features in Wikipedia, for example?
Actually, what I have here is already Wikibooks, so I can. They also started a kind of news section, which is sometimes quite good. For instance, about events in Iraq, I wanted to see some evil pictures, and I was looking at Google and couldn't really find it. And then I looked at Wikipedia, it was the first thing on the main page, like here. But they didn't put the picture here, but it was Abu Ghraib prison scandal and stuff. So, any specific suggestion for topic or no? Well, we can look at crash test dummies, software patterns. Yeah, that's a good one. Stop this one. Also, one thing is the nice URLs. You don't have. You can just. It's easy to remember. You have the URL /wiki/. Name of the thing. Of course, you have to do the underscore there, and it has redirects. So if now I typed software patterns, but you're supposed to describe the singular thing most of the time, unless there's only plural things, such as trousers, I think. here you have the table of contents, and you should make it some bigger. This is first. It's usually starts with a kind of definition. These are the links, the internal links. And if you click on those, you end up in another article. And there's a red link. If I click on it, then I can just click on it. Just do it on my Fenster. Maybe. Then I can start the article effect, so the patent claim, on which there's not an article yet. But as you see, it doesn't have the typical wiki kind of view with ugly uppercase links and stuff like that. Maybe I should log in, and because certain options are only available if you log in. Sometimes it's a bit slow because it's quite popular, and they constantly have to upgrade servers and add database servers. Now you have here the little edit link, if you clicked on that, you can just edit one paragraph, or actually one heading. Well, here's like the way they do links, which might look it looks actually okay, I think, but I'm very much used to it. But you can link to other things than what the word is, than the name of the word. If it's just like here, you don't have to add extra things. Another great thing is the watch list. You can see if you can add pages to your watch list, and then you can go to your watch list and see what happened, what was the last change to the article, which is a bit of a so here you see George Bush, for instance. You can yes, okay. On this dog page. You see the differences, so you can easily, in one view you see that nothing bad happened to the page, because you see in red that only one thing has changed, and it's not that bad, which has changed. And this is the dog page, which, as you see, the George Bush page is quite popular to discuss. And it ranges from very, like, things that aren't really, wouldn't bother me at all, and to more picky things. Like, here's somebody, well, and then you have some discussions, and then usually it ends with people agreeing, or they say, well, they don't really agree, but I can live with it. Yeah, what more can I show you? I don't know. Well, you see the translations. If I click, for instance, on Deutsch, then I go to the German Wikipedia with an article about Bush. It's not really a translation, so that's sometimes if you're looking for something, you can look at different languages in order to find what you need, although the English version is usually the most complete. And you have like the Wikipedia namespace, which is for things about Wikipedia. So yeah, here's a page about pages needing attention. So if there lacks a little thing, or somebody thinks something should be added, or it's full of spelling errors, you can add it there. And there are also very useful things such as lists. Current events is the news thing. You see, Israel is also quite popular too. Right. And here you see, without logging in, you just get the IP address there. And if I look at my watch list, I see IP addresses. I might be more inclined to check whether it's vandalism or not. With regular users, you can be quite sure that it's not vandalism.
Are you officially responsible for checking vandalism?
Well, that's another thing, maybe. There are not really people officially responsible. So you just have moderators, which they can block people. Then you get like your third link to block a certain IP address or even user.
But do you feel yourself responsible, just morally responsible for the pages you have on your watch list? Do you feel like I keep an eye on these pages?
Well, I keep an eye on it, and if I don't agree with some, with if somebody added something, I try to tweak it. For instance, interesting and very appropriate for this conference is free software. Because I added, at first I started just with, I don't really know, we could check the history list, but I had to do several edits to in order to keep it there, this part of thing. And this as well, because first I wrote it down differently, somebody didn't, they said it's like bullshit, and then I was like, I think it has to be there. So I put it back, and slightly different, slightly modified, and he was again, like, it should be removed. And then some other people came by and said, yeah, it's okay like that. I mean, if you just change that, this and that, then it can stay. So, yeah. So if somebody would remove it now, it would be put back by other people, I think. Because, yeah. I also added, for instance, the Connect switch is still like a stub. That's what you call Stumpfe oder so. It's not a stub anymore, maybe, but if it would be just this, you add a message that it's not complete yet, and then everyone is encouraged to add information. Actually, here I would still think there's need for some more information.
So you can edit and correct ÖkoNux?
Yeah, if you have any suggestions to add, or would, yeah, maybe.
On the last line. This was O. Not with you.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. You can, like, if you contribute, you can say watch this page, and you can either say it's minor or major. This is definitely minor. You can give a little comment, so it makes it easier for other people to see what you did. Oh, again. Yeah. I don't know who chose the name. Seems to be.
It's a mixture of economy.
Yeah, but it's really hard for a non, like, people don't know how to pronounce it in English, and I heard Oikonux, and we could add a line. I don't know. Suggestions, or I just save it. Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, we can. You say Ökonux, so it's like you have to.
You are.
Funny.
Oh. Yes. Yeah. Well, if somebody's unhappy, it's easy to change later on. So.
Yeah.
Kind of, it's a vague, but it's pretty minor. Always, if you add a paragraph, it's definitely major, but if you add just the pronunciation, then you can improve. I'm not really sure yet. More questions or?
Are there activities among universities? Do you understand me?
Yeah.
It's for the stream. What I'd be interested in is, are there activities among universities to systematically contribute to Wikipedia?
Not really, as far as I know of, although there was one project which was more like a class or a group of students that were using Wikipedia as a project.
I think the project could really profit from students carrying out the project and definitely having the task to later contribute whatever they research.
Always when I'm talking to people writing anything, I say to them that they can copy stuff to Wikipedia. For instance, or even journalists or like anybody who's producing text can in principle contribute. And but it would definitely be interesting if universities or schools started to use it.
I think at the moment we're sitting in a room of Vienna University, so
there may be
a possibility for us to suggest why not make it a task for students to contribute.
Yeah, if you're at here at the university, you can propose it. I think, you can propose.
I'm actually running a wiki. I'm running a wiki here.
Okay.
But that would be a different talk. Anyway, that's probably one thing.
No, I don't want to present this, but I'm just to mention that I'm running a wiki. I'm using it in a seminar, and it's a collaborative working and writing environment. It's not the same principle as the Wikipedia, because it's much more focused on the interests of a classroom. But it does extend to various colleagues at the institute, and I do feel that I should contact, for example, it's on Hegel, by the way, different Hegel scholars, and we could set up a collaborative Hegel wiki writing project.
Or you could write about all different aspects on Hegel on Wikipedia. Or you can, what is possible as well is that you just give permission to copy text you write to Wikipedia, which I asked for at several websites, and they were happy to provide me with the permission. And then I could just copy-paste and add one or two sentences, and there's a new article. For instance, this would be really nice if this would be permitted.
We have to come to...
It's actually a research project.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We have to come to an end, but one more question, two more questions.
Let me just add one experience of my own. I had one similar project back in 96 already, where I was thinking about something like a pre-wiki project of social theory on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I applied for financiation to the Forschungsförderungsfonds in Vienna. And it was renounced because it was not a scientific project in the original sense of the word. So it's there's still some like
it's hard to convince existing institutions. For instance, Herbert, even if it's a research project, there might be definitions or an overview of certain things, which might be directly usable in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a trend I noticed in applied science not to publish things, to keep results secret if they can be used for something. To apply for patents with papers about things on which papers you can't reproduce what they did. Do you think this could be overcome by such open science? On the other hand, is such open science maybe a chance for not for research which does not put a profit?
The idea to, I think your question was to overcome the problem of privatization and or
making profits from science.
Profits from science. When something has been written for the first time on a project like this, then it's hard for a company to ask for patents on it. They cannot. They can use the knowledge, of course. I don't know if I really understood your question, though. You can. If it's a counter movement to the existing science, or. Yeah. Yeah, it is meant to be like a movement against that, but at the same time, it's radically different. I think when you move away from the way science is done now, because you don't have authors anymore, like in the traditional sense of the word. So it's definitely a kind of counter movement, both against negative results of privatization, but also to have a more anarchistic kind of science.
It seems to me that it would be very difficult to involve existing scientists in the existing structure with this, because effectively they're pre-publishing work. It's been available to the public here. Without peer review, it's very hard to identify for sure exactly who's participated in it, so publishers may be afraid of... So the kind of people, if Wiki Research is successful, the kind of people involved are likely to be people on the fringes of universities or outside universities. Yeah. So it has the potential for building something competitive to universities, but not really... I think it would be very hard to revolutionize universities from inside with this approach.
I have a question. How is metadata handled by the wiki? Metadata. Keywords, for instance.
There is being worked on, but the media wiki developers have a huge list of features to be implemented. One of them is to have metadata kind of information on articles, so that it becomes easier to get lists and also to have outside access in a more structural way.
As I see, the most negative part of Wiki is that the missing semantic connection between the things.
It's the wiki links that make up the network. Yeah. So it depends on where you put the links and where you don't put them. That's maybe something I can show. If you click... You know, what links here? You see, this has been linked. This is probably a bug, I think, which can happen sometimes. So, it's been discussed in the talk called Marx page, obviously. And then you can see. But what's linking to it? That's not obvious. I mean.
Probably not Wikipedia, but in other wikis, it's not quite obvious what lies beyond the link, actually. So just the structure made by the links, as you showed here, give us much information about what's behind this link. And
that's true. That was lacking in many wiki systems.
Yeah, that's
which is done in MediaWiki. That's why it's one of the reasons of the success of Wikipedia, I think. That you have a way to find kind of meta information about the articles. Here you see what's linking to Karl Marx, for instance. You wouldn't think of list of people is interesting. Let's talk list of people.
Here's the problem. What link is more information and it's bigger, more white.
Maybe you can debate this in small groups.
Okay.
We have to close and finish. Thank you, Kasper, and thank you all.